listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio Mayor Gina Ortiz-Jones has been using her overseas trade missions to make a case that the Alamo City could compete for industries that will be shaping the next economy. Her latest trip, a visit to Taiwan, pitched San Antonio as a spot for Taiwanese firms looking to expand in the United States. And Mayor Jones is here to tell us more and to take your questions. You can call in at 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And Mayor Jones, welcome back to The Source. How'd it go?
Oh, it went well. It went well. I think, you know what I have found time and time again is folks know about Houston and Austin and Dallas, but they don't necessarily know about San Antonio. But when they get to know us, they're impressed. And I think we've got a real case to make for why San Antonio is where folks should invest. So here are the things that I hit on the trip. And it was actually great because, you know, as you know, I recently launched the Mayor's Economic Security Advisory Group, right, which will focus on ensuring that we are as competitive as possible in AI, quantum, biotechnology, and space manufacturing. So the Taiwanese president, President Lai, he similarly tasked, frankly, the country to focus on key industries that are important for economic and national security. So their five areas are AI, semiconductors, military, security and surveillance, and then next-gen comms, so 6G. So not only did the our priorities align, but as you know, based on some of the conversations at the federal level, there's been a commitment by some countries to invest in the U.S. So the priority areas aligned, but they also have $250 billion that they need to invest in the U.S. on top of a separate $50 billion just on defense industries. So again, when you look at the, as I explained, shared with them, when you look at the talent, second largest cyber presence out of the outside of the D.C. area, 99,000 advanced manufacturing workers already in our community, on top of the power, right? Power is a huge concern for a lot of these large manufacturers. And, you know, we having the largest municipally owned energy utility is, and when you look at our power generation plan, I think gives people a lot of reassurance that we're going to be able to meet those needs. So I walked away very excited. We already have follow-on visits scheduled. Actually, some of them coming here. And as you know, this all really started with when I hosted that Taiwanese delegation last fall. So we've been very aggressive, I would argue, in making sure that when they're considering investments and whatnot, that San Antonio is top of mind.
Was there anything in particular that seemed like was of interest to them, any kind of manufacturing that they wanted to bring here?
Well, you know, I'll be honest with you. The thing that they most wanted to ensure that any community could provide is talent. Talent, talent, talent. I thought it was going to be, again, because you hear a lot about certainly direct flights are important, certainly power generation is important, but talent. One of the places I went to go visit is TSMC, Taiwanese Semiconductor Manufacturing Corporation.
Which is the
premier of the premier, right? I mean, they're making semiconductors in Taiwan that we don't even have yet here in the U.S., right? So as they're looking to expand, again, we're a community that would be ripe for an investment like that. So really wanted to lean forward and do that. But it was about talent. That is really what they wanted to make sure, you know, what do you have today, but also how are you securing that pipeline of talent in the future? That's why it was great for me to, again, highlight the bond that was just recently passed out of Alamo Community Colleges, talk about, in particular, the advanced manufacturing program at Alamo Community Colleges, as well as the great talent that we already have today. So when you're thinking about manufacturing, there was a lot of not surprisingly, I think we all recognize the importance of leaning forward on the security piece of this, which is why, you know, the ESAG is going to be focused on quantum. And what is that post-quantum environment for folks that are following that news? You know, there was an article from Google recently that they were essentially saying, hey, we've got to be quantum ready, not by the 30s, but now by 2029. And again, quantum is going to be, you know, once whoever cracks that code, no pun intended, there's so much information that is going to be at risk, which is why it's really important we are moving ahead as quickly as possible. Late last year, there were Department of Energy grants that were awarded to communities. And as a result, for example, there's a quantum campus that's going to now be built in Chicago. And so, you know, what I really want us to be doing locally is thinking about, okay, we didn't compete for that, we didn't get that, but what are the things, how else can we set ourselves up for so when that opportunity presents itself again, there's no doubt that San Antonio would be a premier place for that.
Thing about quantum is if someone does crack it, then encryption would be basically worthless because it could be able to bust it, you know, easily.
Exactly.
Like a cheap padlock.
That's right. That's exactly. I mean, that's a perfect analogy of what you just said. But that's why we've got to move as quickly as possible, because this is not only, you know, that super secure satellite, but that's also, hey, all those bank transactions, right? Literally everything that currently encrypts our information now is at risk. So we need to move to the post-quantum environment. And so, and this is why I think, you know, in the absence of a push maybe at the federal level or at the state level, what can we do at the local level? There's lots of things that we could do at the local level so that when those funds become available at those two levels, that we're ready. This will inform, again, what does our state ledge agenda look like? Again, it's great that Texas Cyber Command is here, but what are some other ways in which we can make ourselves competitive, not only in AI, but also in quantum?
I'm curious, your previous life working in, you know, national security, and was there concern with anything said about the United States' willingness to defend Taiwan?
Well, yes.
Don't we have a responsibility?
Yeah, well, I think Taiwan is watching with great interest what's happening with Ukraine, because at the end of the day, you know, what is always so important is how our partners and allies understand our commitment to them and our commitment to the values that underpin these relationships. And so, we were talking, and that's actually a point that I made, which is, you know, yes, we want here to talk about technologies and whatnot, but also, you know, San Antonio's Military City, USA, right? There's not going to be another community, I think, that uniquely appreciates the importance of standing by and with our allies in the interest of democracy and human rights and values. And so, one of the things I was honored to do is sign a trilateral MOU. Two of our sister cities, Kumamoto, Japan, and Kaohsiung, Taiwan, they are also each other's sister city. So signing the trilateral, again, just reaffirmed our commitment to strengthening those relationships, but also recognizing our mutual challenges and opportunities, frankly, took those relationships to the next level by really looking at, okay, now what are the introductions among our entrepreneurs that we need to make so that we're strengthening those entrepreneurial and technological communities and investments as much as possible. Because again, both of them already have a TSMC. We'd like that as well. And both of those communities are respectively known as the Silicon Valleys in their own countries.
You mentioned drone technology is something. And
absolutely.
There's talk in national security that we need a drone border wall, defense against drones coming across the southern border. San Antonio seems to be well situated in trying to come up with something or lead that. Counter drone technology is something that is probably a growth area.
100%. And that's why I'm so thankful that Dark Hive is based here in San Antonio, a company led by John Goodson that recently was awarded a $50 million contract from the Pentagon. And he also, that's why I also named him to the Economic Security Advisory Group, right? These are folks that are working in industries that are cutting edge and representative of the types of opportunities that we need to lean into. Those are also good paying jobs. When you think about the name of the game with drones right now is scale, right? And so scale and mass. And so you need to produce these things as quickly as possible because these are kind of like one and dones, right, for the most part. And so you got to make those things. One of the things to your point earlier about kind of what did I walk away with? One of the things I think is an opportunity for us is to really be clear about how we are shoring up a key part of the talent pipeline, which is our trades. somebody's got to build that doggone data center. Somebody's got to build these drones, et cetera, et cetera. So there are some what I'm calling kind of AI-proof jobs, right? Your electricians, your plumbers, your welders. I mean, this is why you see some of these, frankly, private equity firms investing heavily in those programs because they know that's a critical part of this. And so I think we may have some opportunities locally to refine our own efforts to ensure that we've got sufficient supply of those folks who are going to need to build these things. And those are certainly AI proof.
Right. And it's an industry that is developing quickly. Mm-hmm. And being able to show the flag that mm-hmm. San Antonio yeah. has majorly interested and willing to invest in these areas, does that have a lot of does that bring some credibility to these trips?
I think it does. I think, you know, I was honored to be hosted by essentially their deputy secretary of state. Right. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs hosted us. And I, you know, the delegation was I was very proud to lead a delegation of who's who, from Jim Pershbach at the port to highlight, again, the great things that are happening there. We also had Heather Hansen with Biomed. The biotech sphere is something where we have a unique advantage already. And so just highlighting for folks what's possible here, especially in the defense health health area. As well as Eric Adolph is the CEO of Forward Edge, that post-quantum company that I just mentioned. Again, so a really great showcase of the talent that's available here and the partnerships with local entities, but also partnerships with the municipalities, right? We're looking for them to invest here, and we look forward to supporting them.
And you had District 9 council member with you as
well.
That's
right. Councilwoman Spears did such a great job, you know, truly. She did a great job, I think, highlighting what we all know to be true, which is San Antonio is a great place to work, live, and play. So I'm very thankful she did a great job and was able to join.
Let's take a break here. I'll get Nick on the air with the mayor when we come back. You can call in 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Source continues right after this.
Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With me in the studio, San Antonio Mayor Jean Ortiz-Jones, just back from Taiwan and Washington, D.C. She's out there telling everyone about San Antonio opportunities that we have. And you can call in with your questions and comments. And the number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And we have Nick on the line. Nick, you're on the air. Go ahead, Nick.
Hey, guys. First of all, thanks for having me on the line. Proud supporter of TPR and Mayor Jones. As a Texan who lives outside of city limits, looking in and kind of seeing like the education rates for Texas versus the United States, when you say that talent is a big thing, mm-hmm. How are we trying to shore that up with like schools closing, the education rates against the national standard are lower in some areas? How are we gonna, I guess, protect that or bring those numbers up to really show talent that's not just in the college graduation pool that could potentially, you know, talent from other states moving here, but actually from here?
Yeah. Nick, thank you for your question.
Yeah, I mean, thanks, Nick. This is kind of the heart of the issue, right? Which is why you've heard me talk about the, I think, foundational investments that we need to make so that irrespective of the path that a young person takes in education, whether that be public education or charter schools or private schools, that they have the strongest foundation possible. You've heard me repeatedly talk about, you know, the need to fully fund pre-K for SA in our community. And I think we'd be also smart to fully fund pre-K for our three-year-olds as well. That ensures we put people, again, on the strongest path. I think it's also really important that we look at ensuring that we've got the talent to be in the classroom. I'm very concerned when I read about, you know, insufficient numbers of teachers in our community, you know, folks potentially looking at 4-day work weeks as a result of that. So, you know, these quality of life things, whether it be affordable housing, right? I mean, I've talked to those SAISD leaders. The number one thing that could help ensure that more schools don't close in their community is affordable housing, Right. So as we are thinking about that upcoming bond in 27, we've got to think about the intersections between affordable housing, not schools not closing down, and to your point, making sure we've got the pipeline all the way through of talent.
You know, we've got some great kids in San Antonio.
Yeah.
Maybe their schools are not where they need to be, and we can point to Austin for that, you know, what's happening in the state of Texas. Mm. But we have great kids. They want to succeed.
Yeah.
And when they find a pathway like we have with the Alamo Promise Fund and some of these other programs that have led the way here in San Antonio, these kids have seen a lot and they recognize that they have a great opportunity here and they are making the most of it. I wish we could do that at scale, but at least when there are some kids who really want to take advantage of it, they're there and we have that program for them. So I think there's a lot of great stuff happening.
I think you're right. I think there's we've got to make sure that there aren't just, you know, merely pockets of excellence, right? We need bigger pockets of excellence, if you will, so there aren't such great inequities. I think it's important, though. You know, I read something very troubling a couple of days ago, to your point about, you know, education. You know, these potential conversations at the federal level questioning whether or not public education should be provided to undocumented kids. I mean, talk about a ridiculous policy, also unlawful, right?
It's constitutional.
Exactly right. But also, I mean, like the basic humanity of it, right? There's an estimated 1 million kids in the country that are undocumented. 100,000 of those kids are right here in Texas. And so even if you just distributed them equally between us, Houston, and Dallas, that's, you know, 34,000-35,000 kids that are undocumented, that are deserving of education. And if they don't have an education, who benefits from that? Who benefits from kids not being educated? I think it's just ridiculous. So, you know, we've got to make sure that we're focused not only, yes, on the public education that we've, the pipelines that we have, but also ensuring everyone in our community has the ability to best contribute.
Yeah, that was the Supreme Court's ruling on Plyler versus Doe when they ruled, it was a Texas case out of Tyler, Texas, that said that the state did have an obligation to educate the children of the undocumented, and that this was in the best interest of the nation to do so.
Yeah.
Let's go to Gloria on the phones. And Gloria, you're on the air.
Hi, David. Thanks for taking my call. And Mayor, I want to congratulate you on your successful trip to Taiwan. I just have a comment about this technology that is rolling out so quickly, and you want to be fast about it. But there is really no independent watchdog on this technology. There are no safeguards. They've done away with it. Maybe the standards that were set were maybe in the 1990s, and the leaders of these companies are also, it's a revolving door with government. I don't even know if the EPA still exists, but the FCC has leaders of the telecom. There was 10 years ago an international appeal by scientists and doctors, at least 10 years ago, that when they were rolling out 5G, it's not healthy for the earth or humanity. And now they're going up to 6G. I hear word they're going up to 10G. And it reminds me of the Titan submersible that just imploded because they were hell bent on this great, you know, going to explore the Titanic and all this technology. And then it imploded because they didn't have the proper cautionary.
Well, Gloria, thank you for your call. So we were just talking to Councilmember Mark White, District 10, about oversight and regulation for these data centers that are coming to San Antonio. I guess along the lines that our caller Gloria, what kind of oversight do we need to make sure that we're doing that properly?
Yeah, I think Gloria's question is the perennial question, right? This is at the heart of it, which is how are we ensuring that there are sufficient guardrails so that we are getting the most out of the technology while balancing an individual's agency and what a community understands to be in its best interest in the long term. So I chair the Technology and Innovation Committee for the U.S. Conference of Mayors. And I jokingly said at the last conference, I actually want to rename this thing to Tech, Innovation, and Trust. Right, exactly to Gloria's point, because we have to balance AI with agency. And so I think, though, that there is a way in which, you know, good, smart, ethical people, hopefully your electeds, are you know, thinking about those things. And so because we have some real needs for this technology to help us so we don't roll back some of the progress that we've made. So, for example, you brought up the EPA, very concerned about this endangerment clause, right, that essentially would roll back much of the progress that we've made on emissions. And so I think, though, there is a role in which you can have the technology help us as communities understand, you know, what are the emissions levels moving forward, and how can we best, one, understand those, regulate those things, and then ensure that we're accounting for those things, for example, in our economic development policies, right? So there's a way in which we can use this technology. We don't have to be afraid of it. But you're right. We can't just assume it's going to take care of itself. We've got to make sure that we're balancing the public good with technological advances.
You have a town hall meeting this evening?
I do. Yeah. As you know, as folks know, I do an in-person town hall every month, and I rotate them throughout the council district. So today at 6 p.m., I will be at the Garza Community Center in District 7. Folks are welcome to come. You don't have to live in District 7 to come to the town hall. Again, and I don't filter questions. If you raise your hand, I will very likely call on you and happy to answer your questions.
What kind of questions, what kind of the concerns that people have these days?
Well, I think, you know, it really runs the gamut, to be honest with you. I think, not surprisingly, people are very concerned about affordability, right?
What are we doing? Even now, man.
Even now, absolutely. What are we doing to keep costs down? And so, actually, right after this, I'll go to a CPS board meeting where we will vote on a budget. And if folks are watching that, you know, I think there was a comms challenge that we have since rectified. But, you know, when folks, again, we own this, right? CPS and SAWS, they're both municipally owned. And so rate increases need to come to the council for approval. And, you know, previously it was miscommunicated that, hey, this budget assumes a rate increase. No. Not now. It doesn't. Not in 2026 when you're given inflation, the rising costs, et cetera, tariffs, impacts of tariffs, short-sighted immigration policies, and, oh, by the way, implementation of the One Big Beautiful Bill that's going to slash Medicare, Medicaid, CHIP, and SNAP. And so we have gotten to a place where, you know, this budget does not assume a rate increase. It acknowledges that there is a $50 million gap at this moment in time, and as we get later into the fall, if there is still a continued gap, we are obviously committed to closing that, but that might not require a rate increase and may be able to be covered out of hide. So I think, you know, the affordability issue is something, and certainly as people are at the gas station, right, very real, and so we're trying to do all we can to make sure we're keeping costs down, especially with the utilities.
And keeping the energy rates low is also something that people look at when they think about where they're going to move their business.
100%.
It shows that San Antonio is open for business.
I think that's right. I think keep the costs down. I think also a smart power generation plan that recognizes some of the climate goals, I think people are also paying attention to. So as well as, hey, what does that recycled water infrastructure look like, right? So it's not just the power, it's also the water as they're making those investments. So it's a real strategic advantage that we own both of those utilities, and so we want to make sure we get the most out of those.
Do you think that's one reason why data centers are looking at siting here?
I think it is. I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, we've also got land, right? And I think, look, I think data centers are looking at a lot of communities when you just look at the need. So I think we are attractive for those two things. And so we've just now got to be smart about what we're asking for in exchange.
All right. Mary Gina Ortiz-Jones, back from Taiwan, back from Washington, D.C., giving us an update. She has a town hall meeting this evening in District 7, but anyone can go and ask her questions there and find out more about how she's running San Antonio. Appreciate you coming in today.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening. Thank you.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation. Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to helping Texas communities and emphasizing safety. More at texasmutual.com/texansgetit.